Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Once again, everyone, I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Bobby Goldsboro's career has been a remarkable evolution. This multi-talented performer started out in the early 60s as a guitarist with the legendary Roy Orbison. During his 3 years with Orbison, he traveled all over the world and even toured with the Beatles. 1964, Bobby started his solo career by recording the first of a string of 16 top 40 hits, See the Funny Little Clown. He hit the Billboard charts with 29 consecutive singles. One of his first concert bookings had him opening for the Rolling Stones on their first U.S. tour. In fact, Keith Richards credits Bobby with showing him a guitar technique that he later used. Bobby then opened for the Four Seasons on one of his first tours. Bobby also toured and opened for the Beach Boys. More million-selling hits followed, setting the stage for 1968 and the classic Honey, which became the largest-selling record in the world, selling over 5 million copies. Watching Scotty Grow was 1971's number one soft rock and adult contemporary hit, and his recordings of Little Green Apples and With Pen in Hand have also become classics. 1973 brought Bobby his own nationally syndicated television show, which ran for three successful seasons and became the highest-rated variety show in syndication in the 1970s. His quick wit made him a much-sought-after regular on the TV show circuit as well, and Bobby then formed House of Gold Music, which became one of the most successful music publishing companies in Nashville, publishing such songs as Wind Beneath My Wings and Behind Closed Doors. Bobby Goldsboro, the songwriter, has received 27 BMI awards, and his compositions have been recorded by such diverse artists as Aretha Franklin, John Denver, Paul Anka, Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, Dr. John, Conway Twitty, and Bette Midler. His compositions With Pen in Hand and Autumn of My Life are members of BMI's exclusive Millionaires Club, which contains only those songs which have been played on the air over 1 million times. Bobby's classic composition, Summer the First Time, was recently voted the greatest summer song ever in England. 1999, Bobby was inducted into the Alabama Hall of Fame. He joined fellow inductees Wilson Pickett and the Temptations for a memorable evening of hits. Bobby has quickly gained a reputation as a world-class artist. The Arizona Sonora Desert Museum in Tucson now houses one of Bobby's hummingbird paintings. He is being featured in one-man art shows and galleries around the country. His paintings are being purchased by fans and art lovers alike. Bobby's still an in-demand and popular concert performer, and he still enjoys entertaining his many fans. From opera houses in Italy and France to Carnegie Hall in New York City, Bobby has played them all. In a business notorious for chewing up its greatest heroes, Bobby Goldsboro has come through unscathed and healthy and wholesome as the clean-cut country boy who was in the clean days of rock and roll. The heyday of rock and roll. Like fine wine, Bobby has improved with age. And the best of Bobby Goldsboro may be yet to come. Please welcome singer, songwriter, guitarist, painter, and television producer, Bobby Goldsboro, to the Ray Sasso Show. Hello, Bobby.
Hello. After listening to that, I may be too big for this show.
Hey, we're getting bigger as we speak.
Boy, I forgot a lot of that stuff.
Well, there's more, but, you know, we just can't fit it in this show. I mean,
Good to talk to you.
You're one of those guys that have been with me, you know, all my life. You know, you're always there, you know, as growing up as a kid. You know, I was born in the late 50s. I'll be 60 soon, but you've always been there, you know, you can't say that about many artists.
Well, I hope I'm with you for a long time to go.
I think you will be. You know, before we get started, I got to ask you, can you still do the cricket?
Always. And I think I get more requests for that than I do to sing Honey.
That's amazing, isn't it? I saw on YouTube that you did on Monday Night Football where Howard and Dandy Don, they were all excited. I think it was like back in a Monday Night Football game in 73, and they stopped the show and asked you to do the cricket. It was so funny.
And the funny thing is, it's actually a tree frog, but everybody calls it a cricket. But I've tried to learn to do a cricket, and I can't do it. So everybody says, let me hear the cricket, and I go, and they say, there it is, you know.
I don't know how you do that. I think you're the only one in the world that can do that.
Well, actually, I'd told a story when I was when I was with Orbison. We toured with the Beatles for 2 weeks, and I was on the bus with them and Jerry and the Pacemakers and all that. And I kept putting them on for the first 2 or 3 days. I would do that, and they noticed they never heard that noise except when I was around, so they knew it was me. And they all tried to learn it. And Paul McCartney actually learned how to do it pretty good.
Did he really? So I didn't know that.
He's the only other guy I know that does it.
Well, that's a good trivia question right there. I don't think I've never seen that on YouTube. I mean, not on YouTube, on the internet, huh?
He may not want anybody to know it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you live in Ocala, which is. Do you know Travolta, John Travolta, at all? Because I know he lives out there.
We've never met. We've been to so many places. I go in some place, they say, you know, John Travolta was just in here, and then I'll go in, and they say he said to say hello, and we've never run into each other up here.
Yeah, he's got that fabulous house with the airport, you know, because he flies jets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
We see his plane goes over occasionally, and we've been out to the airport, it's been out there several times.
And you graduated from Auburn. You went there for 2 years at Auburn. My daughter graduated from FSU, kind of rival schools, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep. And you've been out in Ocala now for how long?
Oh, gosh, we've had our place here for about 31 years, but I had built this place when I was still living in Nashville, and my wife and I kept going back and forth, and finally we decided, you know, we need to be in one place or the other, and we both liked it better down here. I'm from Florida originally, from Mariana, which is in northwest Florida. So we decided to sell our place in Nashville and head down here, so we did. We've been here for 31 years.
31 years, yeah. I love Ocala. You know, we always drive through Ocala, of course, in Gainesville, going up to Tallahassee to see my daughter when she was in college over there. Ocala's a cool place. That's horse country.
It is. Most people think because it's known as horse country. They got so many racehorses down here. But most of the horse farms are on the other side of where we live. We live in the swamps and by the National Forest. We got 123 acres. We got a 13-foot gator and tons of bears and all kind of critters on the property. So it's a neat place.
Oh, you got bears, huh? Wow.
Oh, yeah. We have black bears up here quite a bit, and we know when they move around and where they move around. So I've walked up on one about 20 feet from me, and he just looked at me for a second and took off the other way, which I'm glad of.
My son just came. They have a trip every year to Tennessee. They go to Gatlinburg. And they have a cabin out there, and they see the bears all the time. They say the bears kind of leave you alone. They go after the trash. Is that true?
Yeah, they usually do, but that's the problem. A lot of people will feed them thinking it's cute because they're not from the area, and they start feeding them. And then the people that live there have to put up with a bear that's in their backyard or going through their garbage, which could be dangerous, you know. So better to they usually don't mess with you unless you, you know, if you walk between them and the babies or something, which I don't plan on doing that anytime soon. So,
hey, have you seen a panther out there?
Haven't seen one. No, I'd love to. Yeah. I'm a wildlife nut anyway. My wife and I just got back from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. We spent 3 months out there. Because I'm painting now, so I would go out and I photograph all the wildlife, and then I come back and paint them. And I just we just photographed a grizzly bear and tons of elk and bison and wolf. They got a great shot of a wolf, and so I'm in here painting as we speak. I had just put the brush down to make this call.
Well, I got to ask you about that. Did you finish the Baby Steps painting, the mountain goats?
It's almost complete. I went ahead and had them put it on the website. It's pretty much complete. I've got a few little touch-ups to do here and there, and I got to varnish it. But it was close enough that I let them go ahead and put it on the website.
I've always been intrigued by mountain goats. I think they're the coolest animal in the world.
When you watch these babies playing up there, 2,000 or 3,000 feet up in the air, and they're running up on with a drop off of 3,000 feet, and they're just playing like they're on the sidewalk or something. So they're amazing animals.
They are amazing animals. I'm a big nature buff too, and I love animals. I could never be a hunter. You know, I interviewed Ted Nugent. You know, and he's a big hunter. And
oh yeah,
I don't even bring up the subject.
he makes so many good points. I've sat with him for a couple hours down in Naples, and he just makes one good point after the other. But the bottom line is, I just don't want to shoot anything. You know, so
I can't either. You know, especially a deer. You know, they're so innocent looking. You know.
Yeah. Well, I just got through painting. I'm working on a deer, actually, and I've got about three going right now, and I just finished a big elk painting. So I love the wildlife.
Have you done a bald eagle yet, an American bald eagle?
No, but I photographed one in the gallery that I'm in out in Jackson Hole. I showed them the photos that I had, and that's one they picked. They want me to do the eagle. So that'll be one that I'll be doing in the next few months.
Well, I may buy one of the bald eagle paintings once you,
great,
do a few
sounds
of them.
Sounds good to me. I'd love to have you have one of mine.
I love those animals. I think they're the greatest, you know, they're, you know, most powerful, you know, and strong-willed type animal.
Yeah, we saw so many of them out there, and it's so great. I went and bought this for this last time. I bought a really good telephoto lens so you don't have to be up so close on everything, and I got some incredible shots of the eagle, and that's how we were close enough with the grizzly that I didn't even have to put the telephoto lens on. And
you're kidding me.
We just got some incredible shots this time. I got thousands of shots of bison and elk and, like I said, the wolf and the grizzly and whatever's out there. I'll photograph it and come back and paint it. I love it.
Well, you're an amazing artist, man. I went through
all your
sites. You know, everyone can go on your website, and you've got, you know, a lot of them are already sold. But I saw... I'm going to Reagan National Airport in a couple of weeks, and you actually have a painting hanging up there, don't you?
Well, what I did, I don't know if it's still there. It was a display they did at the airport. I did a series of Hubble paintings based on the Hubble spacecraft photos. They're all kind of abstract, large paintings, and they heard about them, and they came down and interviewed me and showed all the paintings, and then they put a big display of them in the airport up there. It was there for quite a while, and they also have something on their website, on the NASA website. So that was a big thrill for me.
That is a thrill, yeah. I wonder if it's hanging up in NASA now.
Possibly so. I don't know.
Yeah, because they have that NASA hub over there in Maryland, you know, the Goddard Space Center, too.
Yeah.
I think that's where the Hubble started, actually. From that
I love the shots they get, and now they're sending up a new one, I think, that's going to have even more incredible shots, so I can't wait to see those.
Well, maybe they'll send you up on one of the missions so you can take pictures or paint pictures.
That would be fun.
Now, your buddy is Ray Stevens, right? That's one of your buddies. You guys go back 50 years.
Yeah,
and
he's
one of
my best friends, and he's, you know, I was still with Roy Orbison the first time we backed up Ray on a show. Ray had opened for Orbison, and we had to learn his records. And, in fact, the first song we backed Ray up on was Jeremiah Peabody's Polyunsaturated, Quick Dissolving, Fast Acting, Pleasant Tasting, Greenman Purple Pills. I can't believe I remember that title.
I don't know how you remember that. Wow.
I don't think Ray can even remember that now.
That sounds like a Ray Stevens song, though.
Yeah. He's but a funny guy.
You painted him on stage, and I think it hangs at the Cabaret, right? Showroom?
Yeah, his showroom. He built this $20 million nightclub in Nashville, just completed this past winter, and he called me one day and said, I've been looking. Well, I went up and did his TV show, and this on PBS, and I brought some of the photos of the paintings I'd done, and he wasn't even aware that I was painting, and he called me last year and said, I want you to do a painting of me on stage, and I want to hang it in the Cabaret, his new theater. And he said, I want it to be 4 feet by 8 feet. And I said, that's a big painting.
Yeah,
that's a lot of Ray Stevens. So he said, I got to decide what I want you to paint, and I'll get the photo down to you. And then he sent it to me, and I started on it. And a few days later, he called and said, I made a change. The background, I want to put a different background in there.
And
instead of the they had these stars in the background, a black background with stars, and then he wanted the whole, it was a shot like from the moon of the Earth, and it's like Ray is out in space, and so I ended up doing it, and I named it Ray Stevens Way Out There. And it's hanging in the theater now, so it looks good up there.
How long did it take you to make that?
Well, I started, he didn't give me the shot until early December, and I took it up for his Valentine's, big Valentine's show in February, so I worked on it most of that time, tweaking it and making changes. And he would call and say, "Yo, I'd send him the picture." He says, "Can you that my eyebrow on that little on the left eyebrow? Can you change?" I said, "Well, that's the way it is in the photo." He said, "I know, but I'd rather have it just like the other one." So I'd make little changes like that, and he finally got it like he wanted it. So it was I was happy with it, and so was he.
That's awesome. Sometimes friends are the toughest customers too, you know.
Yeah.
Ray Stevens, for the audience, you know, I mean, he's famous for so many songs. Guitar Zan, one of my favorites. The Streak, of course. He did Everything Is Beautiful.
Everything is Beautiful is a classic, you know. That's one of the greatest songs I've ever heard, you know.
Another guy I love is Jim Stafford. You know, he was always a favorite of mine, too. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Do you know what happened to Bobby Gentry? I know you were probably good friends with her a long time ago.
I don't know if she's still in the business or not. I know she got married a couple of times, and I think she just stopped recording for a while, so I'm not sure.
That's such a shame. She was a
heck of a talent,
talent,
I'll tell you. She did my TV show a couple of times, and really nice lady.
You know, so many people on the Internet are asking what happened to Bobby Gentry, because she, you know, everybody loves her, you know. She was such a great artist. And such a pretty lady, too, you know.
I don't know. I think she just might have. There are a lot of people that, after they've been in the business for a while, they decide they just want to do something else and get out of the limelight. And maybe that's what she did. But she sure was talented. Still is, I'm sure.
Yep. And you were buddies with Burt Reynolds there, too, for a while, right?
Yeah, buddy. We met in 71 on the Mike Douglas show and just became the best of friends. And I went out and had a company with Bert out in L.A. and did all the music for Evening Shade and a couple of movies he did and things like that. And we've just been friends over the years. He's been having a lot of physical problems in the last few years, you know, open-heart surgery and things like that. But he's a survivor, I'll tell you. He's a good guy.
He still lives in Florida, too, doesn't he? I think he's still
I think he's in Florida, and I think he still goes to L.A. a lot, the last I heard. I haven't talked with him, in a couple of years now.
Yeah. Well, you've recorded 70 singles released to U.S. radio with additional songs to foreign countries and had 54 different songs ranked on Billboard and Cashbox magazine single charts. That's incredible.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. That is incredible. And
I'll tell you what, I've been so fortunate, and I mean this sincerely. I was when I started out, I was in a little band up at Auburn my second year and didn't know what I was going to do when I got out of school. All I wanted to do, I was into music by then, but I didn't know any much about what to do about it. And we were hired, we happened to be in the right place at the right time. A guy called from Nashville looking for a band to back up Roy Orbison for 4 nights because he had fired his band because he caught him drinking, and he didn't allow drinking in his band, so he needed a band. And it wasn't that we were that good. We were just the only band in the area. So we were hired for 4 nights, and we backed up Orbison for 4 nights. And after that, he said, "How would you guys like to go on the road as my band?" And I never went back to Auburn. And I was with Roy for, about 2.5 years.
Yeah. Your band was called The Webs, right? Was it The Webs?
Right. We had a big spider web on the drum. We had a big spider web on the drum, and we all wore black shirts, black pants, and a white tie with a spider tie pin.
We were cool.
Yeah. We were cool.
What kind of music did you play back then?
Just rock and roll. Strictly rock and roll. I was, whatever was a hit out there, that's what we did. And we played a lot of blues because I grew up listening to John Lee Hooker and Jimmy Reed and blues artists. And so we did a lot of that. And that's what the fraternities and the sororities at Auburn and University of Alabama and Florida State, we even played Florida State a couple of shows. And so that's the kind of music they wanted to hear, and that's what we played.
And you and Roy were roommates, right, for a while?
Yeah, well, Roy, and once I went on the road with him after a week or two, because he always traveled by, he would fly to the date, and then we were, the band, we're in a car driving, pulling a trailer, and finally one day Roy said, why don't you fly with me on the next date? And I said, well, I've never even been on a plane, so I flew with him, and we were like brothers after the first week, and all we did was laugh constantly, and so we would just travel together all the time and then do the concerts, and our wives were good friends, so it was just a good. It was a great time for me. I learned so much from Orbison and traveling with him for 2.5 years and doing playing all the big coliseums with him, and got to be out in front of a lot of people, and it got me used to it before I went out on my own.
Yeah, I remember the tour he did with the Beatles.
That was incredible. We went over. Roy was going to headline the tour, and by the time we got over there, the Beatles had become the biggest thing in the world. So. And it was Roy's first tour of England, too, and he was huge over there. So what they did, they had Roy close the first half of the show, and the Beatles close the second half of the show. And even though it was just pandemonium, you know, you couldn't hear anything because of the screaming fans, but Roy would do 2 and 3 encores a night, even though the Beatles hadn't even come on yet. That's how great Roy was.
Yeah, another guy I interviewed that he was around it when the Beatles were just – you know, starting to get real popular, too, was Tommy Rowe.
Yeah, and, yeah, Tommy worked with him, I think, over there. I remember that.
Tommy was telling me he was trying to get the Beatles signed, and nobody wanted to even, they were laughing at him, pretty much, in the beginning, you know. That's amazing.
That's usually the way it works. So many big artists couldn't get arrested to start with, and then that happens. Just like same thing with Garth Brooks and a lot of people, so...
Yep.
You know, that it just shows you got to stay with it.
Exactly. Well, you were almost arrested, you and Roy. thought you were bank robbers, right?
Yeah, we were. That was in Minneapolis. We had done a concert, and back then, we'd play dates, and Roy would get paid in cash, and whatever the door took in. And there were ones, fives, tens, twenties, you know. So we played this concert in Minneapolis, and he had about eight grocery bags full of money. So Roy and me and a couple of guys in the band, we carry these bags of money into the motel, and Roy said, well, it's so late, we'll just count all this in the morning. Let's just put it over there, put it over in the corner, and the next morning we're up, we've got money laying all over the room, putting fives here and tens there and ones and stacks, and finally he said, why don't we go get some breakfast, then we'll come back and finish this. So we leave the room, go eat breakfast, and Roy didn't put a do not disturb sign out, so the maid opened the door, and there was money all over the room, and what we didn't know, the day before, a bank had been robbed in Minneapolis.
Oh, man.
So she goes to the front desk, they call the police call the FBI, and then Roy and I get through eating breakfast, we come back in the room, and we're... starting to count the money, and there's a knock at the door, and I open the door, and he's got, like, four guys are standing there with their hands inside their coats, like, we're going to blow your brains out, you know? And I said, and he looks in, and I said, this is Roy Orbison, and that's all I got out. And the guy says, Roy, I was at your show last night. So thank God the guy knew who he was, and they all came in, and they're laughing about it. They said they thought we were the bank robbers.
Did they ever catch the bank robbers?
I don't even know, because we counted the money and checked out that day and left, so I'm sure they did.
That's a great story. Well, you got to, there's all kinds of ways of getting paid, I guess. Sometimes they'll pay you.
They used to do that back then, you know. They have to have money in advance and put it in your account before they even go out on the road. But back then, you just took what you could get, and sometimes you end up with a bag or two short. Grocery bag short of money.
Well, Roy came out with Pretty Woman, I think this was 64, sometime in August, and then Little Things came out, also in 64. But did you play on Pretty Woman with
No,
with
I had already left, and I had already left and cut. See the Funny Little Clown was my first hit, and then when Pretty Woman came out, I called Roy and I said, I have just written this song called Little Things, and I love this 4/4 beat that's in Pretty Woman. I said I got to put that in my record, because I had like Little Things was a 2/4, and I said I got to make this a 4/4 beat. And he said, "We'll do it." Yeah, and so I changed it to that 4/4 beat. It was the same beat as Pretty Woman, and it was my biggest record at the time.
You were ahead of your time, man, because that was 64. You kind of had that Beatle twang in Little Things. You know, it was a real rocker. I mean,
that's Ray Stevens singing harmony with me on it.
Yeah, I just found that out not too long ago.
Yeah, Ray sang harmony with me on Little Things, and It's Too Late, and even arranged a couple of things in one of my albums. So Ray's a talented guy. And
he is a talented guy.
Like I said, he's been a good friend for 50 years.
Who are some of the guys you admired at, you know, when you were a kid, when growing up?
Everybody I admired were baseball players. I wanted to play Major League Baseball.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, I didn't realize, I mean, you realize things years later in life, but I could hear songs back when I was 9 or 10 years old, and I remembered what the background singers were doing. I remember what the violin arrangements were and what the horn, and I still can't read music to this day, but I remembered all that stuff, and I could recall all the music stuff, so I had something in me that picked up on all that, but I was concentrating on playing baseball. And by the time I got to high school and I was still 130 pounds, I figured, I don't think there's too many major leaguers at 130 pounds. And by then I'd started playing guitar and got in a band my senior year, and then went to Auburn, and that's how I got started in the band up there. So by then I'd given up on baseball. So all my heroes at that time growing up were ball players.
So who were your hero, your baseball hero? I was a big baseball fan, too, like you.
Well, my big hero was the third baseman for the Cleveland Indians, Al Rosen.
Oh,
and
Al Rosen.
Al Rosen almost
yeah.
won the Triple Crown one year. He didn't step on first base running out of infield grounder. Had he stepped on base, he would have won the Triple Crown. He lost by less than a percentage point to Mickey Vernon. I don't know why I remember all this stuff, but I just thought he was the guy, and I loved the Cleveland Indians. And to show you how smart I was, I had a friend that was a Mickey Mantle fan, and I would trade all my Mickey Mantle baseball cards to him for Al Rosen's.
Oh, no.
And Mantles are worth zillions now, and I don't think can give an Al Rosen card away. But
oh, my God. Yeah, that rookie Mantle.
I wasn't ready for Wall Street at the time.
That's funny. Did you? I was a big Orioles fan. I was actually born and raised in Baltimore, and then we came to Florida about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So my hero was Brooks Robinson, another third baseman.
Yeah.
But I got to play with him.
I did a
fantasy camp with the Orioles. Did you ever think about doing that with the Indians?
Yeah. No, I never did that. They didn't have fantasy camps when I was out there. That all came later. But I would have loved it.
Well, Bobby, you can still do it.
I would love to do it. I don't think my back would let me. But over the years, the thing is, I keep up with it. I look at the box scores every day of all the games. I still keep up with it. That's kind of a hobby of mine. But over the years, I got to be really good friends with Johnny Bench and a lot of the ball players. And in fact, during the 70s, I would go up and I did a concert before one of the Cincinnati Reds games. And Johnny used to, I would be doing a concert in a city that they would be playing in, Johnny would come down to the club after the game and get up and sing Bad Bad Leroy Brown with me. And
And
he came out and did my TV show all 3 years back in the mid-70s. And I went up and did a concert before a game in Cincinnati, and I presented Johnny with a gold record for having sung Bad Bad Leroy Brown 1 million times.
Really?
So it was he's a good guy. He's a good friend. I keep up. I email him pretty regularly, and he's a really good guy.
So, some of my favorite Indians were, I like Rocky Colavito. Remember him?
At the time, he was my favorite. Rocky Colavito.
Yeah. Rocky Colavito. Sam McDowell was a great pitcher. I think he should have been in the Hall of Fame.
Sudden Sam.
Yep.
Sudden Sam McDowell. He was a good one.
Yep. Yeah. I love the Indians always beat the Orioles for some reason back in the day. They were a tough team to beat. Well, I think it's so cool that you played, you knew the Beatles, the Stones. You played with so many great legendary bands. You were at in 64, you played the Paramount with Ed Sullivan was emceeing at the time.
Yeah, that was the final show for the Beatles' first tour of America. And so the promoter asked them who they would like to have on the show with them there for their final concert, and they said they wanted the Brothers Four, they wanted Ed Sullivan to MC, which he did, Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, and they asked if I could be on the show, so I went up and did the show with them.
How close did you get with the Fab Four?
Well, we got to know each other pretty well because we were on the bus together for 2 weeks in England, and then when I got there for the concert at the Paramount, it was just, like I said, just pandemonium outside, and the streets were blocked off, and I finally got inside, and I was backstage, and Neil, the road manager, happened to walk by that I had remembered from the tour 2 years earlier in England, and I said, Neil, how you doing? He looked over and said, well, Bobby, how are you? And I said, doing great. He said, you want to go up and see the guys? And I said, well, are they busy? He said, no, come on up. So we got on the elevator and went up, and the guys opened the door, and all four of them were there, and hey, Bobby, coming in, and so we had a big time. They were good guys.
Good guys, yeah. You're also on a shindig. You were on tons. I saw the list of shows that you were on. It was incredible, you know. And that's why I remember you so much, because you were always on TV.
Well, the thing is, back then there were so many shows to do. Hullabaloo,
yeah.
Shindig,
yep.
Where the Action Is, Dick Clark Show, American Bandstand.
Yeah.
Gosh, there were tons of shows. Lloyd Paxton. I mean, there was you could go to L.A. and stay for a week and do a different show every day, tape a different show. And that's what I would do. I'd go out and stay for 1 week and do, like, five shows and then head home. And then I started – I had never done any of the talk shows until Honey came out in 68, and that's what got me a whole new audience. And I started doing the Johnny Carson Show, Mike Douglas, Merv Griffin, Dinah Shore, David Frost, all the talk shows. And so it got a whole new audience for me.
I want to remind everybody that this is the Power of Honey by Bobby Goldsboro. I've got a year-end Billboard Hot 100 Singles of 1968. Now, this is the end. This is the end of the year, 1968. Mm-hmm. Number one was Hey Jude by the Beatles. Love is Blue by Paul Muriot. And then Honey was number three. Now, this is for the end of the year, the whole year of 68. And,
yeah,
and
well,
Honey hit number one. I don't know how many weeks, but
it was several weeks. But the thing is, I was doing a song, a music festival in France, and after I finished singing Honey, they came out and gave me this award, speaking in French, and I didn't know what it was about. And it was for they had just certified it as the top selling record in the world for 1968. And that's what they gave me the award for. So I remember when Billboard, I think when they came out with that with Hey Jude, I think that was for the also for the most weeks at number one or something, which made it number one. But I was just blown away that I was in the top five, you know, for the year. That just blew me away.
I mean, people that followed you were Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, The Rascals, Cream, Herb Alpert, Simon and Garfunkel. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's that, like you said, it's that's the power of that one song, and I thank God every day for it. Bobby Russell was the writer.
Bobby Russell.
Think that I wrote the song, but Bobby Russell was the writer, and I was just fortunate to get it.
Yeah, Bobby wrote a lot of tunes. The night that Lights Went Out in Georgia, I guess, was a big hit.
He wrote Little Green Apples.
Little Green Apples.
Heck of a writer. He was a good friend, and he came out and did my TV show, too. And so he was a good guy.
Honey was out in 60. I remember 68 like it was yesterday. It was probably the scariest time I ever remember as a kid, because you had the assassinations, we had all the riots. My dad had we had retail electronics stores in D.C., and of course we had the riots in Washington, just like Detroit and Chicago and everywhere else. So it was a very, very scary time in 68, but the music was incredible.
Well, you know, when you see all these retrospective shows done on VH1 and all about the turbulent 60s, and then when you get to 68, there's never any mention of Honey, because it didn't fit into with their with the turbulence, because it was totally different from all the other things that were out there. So I guess that's why they didn't include it.
Yeah. The other big song that was Abraham, Martin, and John by Dion. That was another one.
That was a great record.
Yeah. And then, of
it's
course,
funny,
Summer
I keep
the
saying
First
record, which dates me. I know there are no more records, but
I know
that's what I call them.
Yeah, I tell everybody I interview that the best times were when we had 45s. I don't know what it is, but the sound was crisp, clear, and it had a sound of its own. You know, you can't match
and also,
that anymore.
And also back then, you could have a top 10 that had the Beatles, Paul Muriat, Herb Alpert, and you know, and the Lennon Sisters were in the top 10 a lot of times at that same time. I mean, so they played everything, and now everything is so pigeonholed. You know, you don't see it. And I think as a result, a lot of audiences never hear some music that I think they'd like.
Yeah, the music business has went down the tubes. I was a top 40 disc jockey back in the late 70s. And I love top 40. A lot of people criticize it and say, you know, we like underground rock and this and that. No, I love top 40 music. And I interview a lot of top 40 guys, like Tommy James. And, you know, I love going back to those times. They were wonderful, wonderful times. And like you said, you could have had a Bobby Goldsboro song, then a Frank Sinatra song, and then, you know, They're Coming to Take
and
Me Away.
Would
be
there were a lot of instrumental hits at the time, and now you never hear anything like an instrumental on the radio. So it's a shame, but that's the way it is.
It is sad. I hope things turn around. Sometimes they say that, you know, things come around again in circles, you know, and I hope it does happen.
Maybe
and
so.
Also, Some Are the First Time, that's another, what a beautiful song that is. And
thank you. I think to this day that's the best record I ever made. It wasn't as big as Honey, but it was the best record beginning to end, I think, I ever made.
Well, you wrote that, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, I was so happy with it that I got every lick that I heard in my head, every string line, everything exactly like I wanted it. But the key to that record, as far as I'm concerned, was the ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, the piano thing, and that was Kim Tappan, who passed away a year or so ago. He was my piano player, and I had started writing this song in San Francisco. I was doing a promo tour, and I went down the next day to L.A. to do the Tonight Show. And I was standing backstage about to do my song on the Carson show, and I turned around to Timmy. I said, "You got to hear what I've got going here." And I went, "Dun, da, 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 bun," played the guitar, "bun, dun, dun." And he goes, "Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da." And I said, "Don't forget that lick, whatever you do." And by that time, they said, "And now Bobby Goldsboro." And I'm thinking, all I want to do is go back and finish the song. But I said, he remembered that lick, and that, to me, just set that whole thing up. So it was a great piano lick he came up with.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. You know what? It reminds me of, did you ever see the movie Summer of 42?
I did. I later saw that, and there's a lot of similarities in there, sure.
There is. Yeah, Jennifer O'Neill, Gary Grimes, Jerry Hauser, I think, is in that movie, and
it kind of reminded
me of it.
And the thing is, I based the song loosely on an experience I had, but I got to tell you, it was nothing as romantic as I made it in the song. So,
you got to tell me.
Well, no, that's why on stage I say it was. A lot of people ask me if this was if I wrote this from personal experience, and it's none of your business.
Well, all I can say is lucky song. You.
Well, like I say, it wasn't as romantic as the record was, but it was a learning experience, let's say.
I like that. Well, that'll have to be in your book. You got to come out with a book now. And
I'll tell the true story in there.
Yeah, put the true story in there for sure. Another cover that you did, Gene. I mean, only you can do that Rod McEwen tune and do it justice besides Oliver.
Well,
you know, that you did
well,
a great
know
job on it.
I had not met my wife at the time when I recorded that, and she heard that later, and she thought that I had the original hit. I said, I never had a single. It was just out of the album, but it got so much airplay out of the album that a lot of people thought I had recorded it as a single. But it was a great song, and in fact, Rod McEwen did my TV show also back in the 70s, and he was a heck of a writer.
He was, yeah. But, I thought, at first I thought it was you, before. I think you did a better job than Oliver, actually.
Well, I appreciate that. But he was a heck of a singer. I loved his stuff.
Now, I've never met Elvis, but I talked to a lot of guys that knew Elvis. I had Ray Walker on the show from the Jordanaires.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nice guy. Hell of a guy.
He was.
I interviewed Tony Joe White, who did some songs for Elvis and knew Elvis really well. And we talked about Elvis's guitar playing, which was, he was kind of stubborn. He wouldn't learn the guitar like he should. He only did a couple of chords here and there. But
yeah.
What's your experience with Elvis?
Well, I met Elvis. I was on a plane going back then that you flew from Nashville to Memphis and then Memphis to L.A. They didn't have all the nonstops like they do now. And I think this was in the 70s, or must have been the early 70s, and I was on the plane, and David Briggs, piano player, who I knew very well from Nashville, and he was working with Elvis on the road, and he walked by, and he said, "Well, Bobby, how you doing?" I said, "Good to see you." And he said, "Elvis is on the plane. You want to meet him?" I said, "Sure." And I got up, and he said, "I'll just stay here. He'll come up after we level off." So I don't know where he was on the plane, but after we leveled off, Elvis came up and sat with me, and we all the way to L.A., and we talked, and he mainly wanted to talk about Orbison. He just loved Orbison's voice, and we just told Orbison's story. So he was a good guy, and then I went out, a couple of months later, I was opening in Las Vegas at a club, and he was closing at I think it was Caesar's Palace. So I went with some friends of mine down to the show, and on his closing show, and he had them put the spotlight on me and said some nice things about me. So it was a neat night.
Yeah, I heard all good things about Elvis, which is good. When you hear him from people that knew him and everything, and people always ask, was it true? Was he a nice guy and this and that? Yeah,
he seemed to be a real nice guy, and everybody that I know that knew him well said the same thing.
Same thing, yeah. He really became bigger than life, didn't he? I mean,
he really did, yeah.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
That's good and it's bad, because sometimes you get so big that you can't do anything. You have no life, and luckily I never got that big. I can still do the things I want to do, and I can go paint and go out and photograph grizzlies without having an entourage,
Well, it sounds like you got a good life, You're doing everything you want to do.
I've got the most incredible life. I'm telling you, there's nobody on earth any happier than I am.
Good.
A lot of people have had a lot more hits and got a lot more money and a lot more famous, but they're not any happier than I am. I'm telling you, I couldn't, if I hit the $1 billion lottery tomorrow, I don't think a lot would change in my life. So I'm happy.
I talked to Tom Rush, and I told him, I said, there's nothing better than a lone guitar player up on stage with a guitar and a story. I mean, that's it. Who needs a band, I mean, and a
there
songwriter. I mean, if you can write your own music, man, that's everything. And I really admire you for doing that.
It's funny. I started out playing guitar and singing just me and a guitar a lot of the concerts I would do, because I couldn't afford a band, even though I'd had my – I mean, back then you have a hit record and – you get $500, and you got to pay your own expenses. So I couldn't afford a band, and a lot of times I would just do a concert with just me and the guitar. And not that I wouldn't do that now, but my fingers don't work like they used to. I was doing a concert about a year ago, and I was doing the opening to the song, just me and the guitar, and I went to play a chord, and my finger didn't move. It was supposed to bend, and it stayed stuck. And so I thought, what is going on? And I instantly grabbed another chord that worked with what I was doing. I played a different chord and went, and I just said to myself, what the devil's going on? And then later on in another song, the same thing happened. So it turns out I've got getting arthritis and things, and it's just stuff that happens, and luckily I'm not like a Chet Atkins. I don't run up and down the guitar, so I can get by without it. But it's, these are the things that start affecting you over the years. And so painting is a lot less strenuous, and I don't have to worry about sound checks and guitar strings breaking on stage and things like that. So I'm digging the art.
Yeah, art is awesome. And your pieces are beautiful, man. They're incredible.
Thank you. You mentioned that if you go to BobbyGoldsboro.com, you can see all the paintings and the music and all that too, but I've got all of them on there, and there's I keep people ask me that didn't know I paint. What do you paint? I paint everything. I mean, I do a lot of wildlife now, but I've done still lifes. I've done portraits. I've done landscapes and just about everything. I've done a whole series of hummingbird paintings. I've done, I think, 18 hummingbirds, and they are all sold out. I've done like 9 butterflies and all. That was some of the early things I did, but now I'm doing like these mountain goats on the mountain and things like that. I've done a Lakota.
I love the goats. Love the
I've got a new Lakota Indian I just did on an Opelousa horse, and they're they're just totally different from each other. But I love doing whatever's there's so many beautiful things out there. I love to paint everything.
Now, are you attached some way to the American Indian? Because I do see a lot of like garments and things like that you paint.
I'm not, but I've had so much success painting. I mean, I love the history. My wife and I watch so many documentaries on the American Indian, and we've gone out and taken trips out west and gone to sites and things and read up on them, and just we love it because that's the true American, is the Native American, and we've studied so many of them, and here in Florida we have the Seminole Indians, and we've gone to a lot of sites and things like that, and I've got some paintings of the Seminole things here in the house that we bought, so we just love the Native Americans, and I love painting them.
When we had a store, actually it was my store at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in D.C., right off of Pennsylvania Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were in the lobby of the hotel, so we had a lot of celebrities and politicians, everybody coming in the store. And we had John Voight walked in, and he was very big with the American Indian, helping them out.
Yeah.
And he brought in a descendant of Geronimo, and he looked exactly like Geronimo. My gosh. It was like looking at Geronimo. We hugged each other, and he was such a nice man and everything. It was a pretty cool experience. I'm like you. I'm very fascinated with the American Indians. They're so so intelligent, so in tune to the nature and the earth. You know, we can learn a lot.
We learn so much. My wife and I, like I mentioned, I think I mentioned earlier, we went up for 3 months to Jackson Hole recently, and there's so much when you learn about the Indians that were out there and how they lived, and it gets so cold up there for, you know, 6 months of the year. You say, how could they live here? Well, they had their own trails. They had certain places they would go, and they knew when to leave, and there was so much game up there with the elk and the bison. And so we learned which Indian tribes were up there and how they lived and where they traveled to and what their paths were and things like that. I just love that. I'm fascinated by it.
Do you ride horses at all?
I used to. I don't anymore. Yeah. I used to. When I lived up in Tennessee, I had 600 acres about an hour from Nashville, and I had horses up there, and I would go up and ride a lot, but I ended up selling that because we were never up there. I went two years without going up there, so we sold it, and I don't have horses down here. The alligators would eat them down here. they wouldn't last long.
we got a lot of alligators over here, too, mainly on the golf course.
Oh, yeah.
I heard something about you're known for suffering freak accidents. Is that true?
Oh gosh, I've got a whole history with the accidents. In fact, I used to tell stories on stage about them. But in fact, I did a. That's one reason I would. I did. I think it was 9 Tonight shows in a row where I'd had an accident before every one of them. And instead of telling a story about this or that, I would have another accident story. And One night during a commercial, Johnny Carson leaned over and said, "Who are your writers?" And I said, "Well, I've recorded I write most of my own songs, but I've recorded songs by other writers." He said, "No, I mean your accident stories. Who are your writers?" I said, "Writers?" I said, "These are true." He said, "Come on, these things couldn't really happen." I said, "Everything I've told you is true. I mean, I cut my big toe on a Rice Krispie. I've broken four. In fact, you asked me about." Well, my latest accident about a month ago, it's been less than a month ago, I've lived in it. We've had this place for 30-something years. I can go through the house in the dark. Well, I walked through and caught my middle toe. I don't know how the middle toe hit, but it was on our stone fireplace and snapped it. And that was my
fourth
broken toe. I haven't had a broken toe in years, and I've broken another one. So it was blind, and there's nothing they can do for a broken toe.
Right.
They tape it up and tell you to walk on it. So I didn't even go to the doctor, and it's still black and blue a month later. But I do things like this just, you know, it's regular with me. My wife just kind of raises her eyebrows and keeps going. You know?
There he goes again.
Yep. Gosh, I've told so many stories on the Tonight Show, and like I said, Carson thought I had writers for these things. I don't have to.
Yeah.
I still never told them all. So,
well, like I said, write a book. Yeah, if you need any help, I'm an author. I've written a couple of books out there, so I can always come up and help you out.
All right,
Bobby. Here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Gosh, to mean to write and record with, or
record with, just play with, you know? They could be passed on. That's okay.
Well, so many people come to mind. I mean, I've never got to work on stage with Elvis, but I've actually worked with the Beatles and the Stones and Orbison, and there's been so many that I worked with. I got to sing with Bing Crosby, and I would have never dreamed as I was growing up going to the Bing Crosby, Bob Hope movies that I would actually get to sing with Bing Crosby. So there's so many things that have happened that I never dreamed would happen. Mm-hmm. But I got to do one of the – I know this is a little changing the subject a little, but – I was asked recently who thrilled me more to meet than anybody I've ever met, and I really think there were two people. I was thinking about this. The two people that come to mind are not Bob Hope or Mickey Mantle or people like that I've met. One was Neil Armstrong, mm-hmm. the first man that ever left this planet and put his foot down on the moon. I called up everybody I knew to tell them that Neil Armstrong had come over and introduced himself to me, which I was trying to get the nerve up to go over and meet him, and he came up behind me and touched me on the shoulder, and I turned around and he said, "Excuse me, aren't you Bobby Goldsboro?" I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "I'm Neil Armstrong, and I'm a big fan," and I'm thinking,
wow,
I don't believe it, but Neil
That's
Armstrong,
awesome.
The first man on the moon, came over and met me. So Neil Armstrong and Dr. Jonas Salk, who...
Wow.
Who came up with
right?
the polio vaccine.
Oh,
now,
polio,
these are
that's
people
right.
That,
I get them mixed up.
I mean, this is heavyweight stuff when you talk about that. Not somebody that hit more home runs or had a bigger mm-hmm. record than this guy. And I mean, this is somebody that did something for humanity, you know. So these are the people that stay with me that just blow me away that I was in their presence, you know. So as far as perform with somebody, I got to play guitar for Perry Como one night, and here was the clincher. Chet Atkins, the greatest guitarist ever.
Yep.
I walk in, this is a golf tournament, a pro celebrity golf tournament up in North Carolina, and I had done my song with my band. I came walking by, and Chet said, "Bobby, come over here a second." And Perry Como was standing there, and I'd never met Perry Como. He said, "Bobby, it's Perry Como." I said, I know. I'm the biggest fan. You know, I grew up watching Perry Como. He said, "He's going to do It's Impossible, and I can't figure out this chord." And I'm thinking, Chet can't figure out the chord. He said, can you play It's Impossible? I said, "I've never played it, but what key?" He said, "G." And I go, "It's Impossible, ba-da-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da." He said, "Okay, yeah, that's the chord." I said, "Why don't you play it with Perry?" And I said, "Are you kidding?" And Perry said, would you play guitar for me tonight? I said, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot." And I went up on stage and played It's Impossible with Perry Como. Just
That's
blew
awesome.
Me away, and I couldn't wait to call everybody and tell them, "Yeah, Chet couldn't cut it. I had to take over." The greatest guitarist ever. Oh, I said, and he's the one that produced the record. I don't know how he didn't know the chord, but
that is
anyway,
so
that was one of the stories that just stand out in my mind. You know, but
did you find that anywhere on the internet?
Many out there.
Huh? Can you find that anywhere on the internet? You and Perry Como together?
No, it was just it was on it was the Greater Greensboro Open Pro
okay.
Celebrity Golf Tournament, but it wasn't. I don't think it was filmed or anything. There,
right.
Jerry Reed performed that night. Glenn Campbell performed that night. Perry Como, myself, mm-hmm. Chet. So it was all those pro celebrity tournaments. They used to have tons of people that would come to them, and we'd all do shows, and it was all benefit stuff. So,
yep.
But that was one of those memorable nights, and
cool.
Again, happened to be at the right place at the right time. That's the way my whole
yep.
life has been.
How about Sinatra? Have you met Sinatra?
Never got to meet Sinatra.
Yeah.
But I would have loved to. Now, there's you asked me who one of my Field of Dreams. I'd like to play guitar for Frank Sinatra.
Yep.
That would be great. That would be dynamite.
Yep. Yeah, I had some good stories from Trini Lopez. I interviewed Trini Lopez, and we talked all about Sinatra. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he
well,
was
my guy.
A good
my
guy.
I've interviewed so many guys, musicians and actors and actresses and everything. But I got probably one of my biggest thrills when Ted Williams came in my store, and I spent about 3 hours with Ted. That was fun. That was pretty cool. And you know, Ted Williams is one of these guys. You either love him or you don't like him because he just
he
is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know all the stories about from Boston, the fans, and all of that. But I'll tell you, he was to me the greatest hitter that ever lived, and ended up living not probably about an hour and something from here, from where I am, and
yep.
I never could get up the nerve to drive over and meet him because I figured maybe he's in a bad mood, you know. But he was an incredible hitter, and in fact, this is a little story that I just remembered. I told you I'd never painted until the day I turned 65 is when I started painting. I'd never attempted it, never took lessons or anything, and I just started painting. But I came across something that back in when I was in the ninth grade, for some reason, I sat down one day and I drew. I drew just a pencil and a piece of paper. I don't know why I did it, but I drew. I had drawn three pictures. I promise you this true story. One was a bowl of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
One was Jesus, and one was Ted Williams off the front of a sports magazine.
How about that?
Those are the three. And I came across those things about a year ago, and I said, I don't believe it. I didn't even know these things existed, and there was my drawing, and one was Ted Williams.
That's amazing.
So,
and for me to bring it up today, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was cool. I mean, to me, he was like a real John Wayne. That's the way he acted to me, and I love John Wayne.
He was a true American hero. Yep. And I mean, what he did in the war and everything.
Yep.
He's just an incredible person. And he didn't put. And they say he would talk about hitting all day long if he wanted to, but with somebody that knew what they were talking about. He wouldn't talk about hitting with somebody that didn't know anything about it. But I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when he and Tony Gwynn would talk about hitting.
Oh yeah,
that would have been.
Fun. Oh yeah. Well, he's a big electronics buff. And,
oh, really?
And he loved cameras and gadgets. And he wanted me to, when he first came in, he wanted me to teach him about his camera. He had like a Minolta 35mm. It was I forgot which model he had. But I was teaching him about his camera, and then he left. And then he came back in with a friend of his, and he was excited because I showed him a shortwave radio, a portable shortwave radio, and he just had to have it. So he bought him and his friend shortwave radios and some other stuff, but he was so excited to even, you know, talk about electronics and gadgets and things like that. And he's such a nice guy. He said, son, when do you close your store? I said, Mr. Williams, I close when you're done shopping. He says, you should be a goddamn politician, son. That's how he talked. He was really cool. Those are memories you'll never forget.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bobby, what are you doing now? Are you going to go back in the studio? Are you going to make another album? Or are you just going to do your art for a while? Or
I have got so many commissioned paintings to do that it's going to take me through the end of this year and into next year. And I just love it. I can't get one finished fast enough so I can start on the next one. So it's kind of like when back in the 60s when I started writing songs, I would have three or four going at one time, and now it's that way with the art. And I don't like the music any less, but it's just that this has kind of taken over, and it's something that I get up in the morning, my wife and I have coffee, and I head over here to the studio, which is like 50 yards from the house, and I start painting, and the phone will ring, and she says, it's 11:30. You haven't eaten. Time to eat lunch. Knock off. I go over there and I'll eat lunch, and I head back over here. And she calls again at 5. You know. So finally, we'll take a few days off and go somewhere mainly for her, because I would stay in here 7 days a week painting. So I just love it, and as long as I can do it, I'm going to keep doing it. And I'll do a concert here and there, but it's become a hassle to have to go. We're 2 hours from any airport. And then you're 2 hours, you got to get there before the flight, so you got 4 hours into the day, and then you fly somewhere, and you don't get there till that afternoon. You do the concert the following day, and then the following day you fly back home and do the car thing again. So it takes you 3 days to play one, and as opposed to staying here in my bathrobe for 3 days and paint.
there's nothing
kind of
wrong
a no-brainer
with that. I still can't get over how all of a sudden, you know, 65 years old, you start painting, and the knack you have for it, you know, it's incredible.
Well, it's something you have to, I think you really truly have to love it to do it,
right.
And to start learning. And I immediately, when I first started painting, I wanted to complete the painting immediately because I had read Van Gogh did all his paintings in one day, but he's not doing the. He wasn't doing detail and things that I do obviously paint differently than Van Gogh, but I do realism, and to make a mountain goat with all the fur and the hair twisted around it, that takes time to do, and that's what I love doing. So it's a different kind of painting, so it takes a while, and I really get into it, and I've been asked at art shows, somebody said, what music do you listen to when you're painting? Do you listen to your own music or somebody else's? I said, I don't listen to anything. It's totally quiet, because the minute I have something playing, instead of concentrating on the painting, I start listening. I'll say, boy, I like that violin line there. That's mm-hmm. Or that piano part was good. Or I wonder why they didn't do the bass line, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and all of a sudden I'm not painting. I'm arranging a song. So
yeah.
I have to just keep my mind concentrating on the painting.
Well, it's amazing how many paintings you've sold, and for a lot of money. I mean,
When I started out, I said if somebody ever wanted to buy one of these, I would be blown away. Well, now I'm selling paintings. I'm having people commission me to do paintings and large paintings and all kind of. So I'm so thrilled with it, and I never dreamed it would come to this. This is not why I started painting. I started doing it because I thought I would love it, and
mm-hmm.
I do. But the selling of the paintings has been a huge bonus that I never thought about when I started doing this.
Is the mountain goat painting, is that already sold? Is that for
no,
somebody?
No, well, it's the gallery in Jackson Hole, when I showed them the photo that I'd put together
right.
that I was going to paint, he said, no, we want that for the gallery.
I
haven't priced it yet, even because I'm just finishing up. I'll have it finished up in the next couple of days, and then I have to varnish it, and I'll price it.
Yeah.
But I usually will put it on the website for a week or so before I'll send it out to a gallery in case somebody sees it and does like it, you know.
Well, I want to see an American bald eagle. And I want to see a baseball painting.
In fact, Johnny Bench told me I should do the – I don't know if you ever heard of the Mount Rushmore of baseball. They've got it's Johnny Bench, Sandy Koufax.
Oh, wow.
Gosh, I don't know. If Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, I think, is what they – as the great
right.
four greatest players they had. And he said, you need to do a painting of the baseball Mount Rushmore. You'd sell a ton of those. And I said, well, I don't think I could without somebody – suing me if that's, you know, I don't know. I would have to find out. That would be fun to do a Mount Rushmore of the baseball players, you know.
Well, just put your favorite baseball players.
There you go.
You wouldn't get sued for that. Yeah,
make
put Rocky Colavito.
Al Rosen, Rocky Colavito.
There you go.
They would all be Cleveland Indians.
There you go. Who's the, what was it, Bobby Feller, right?
Bob Feller, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite pitcher was Bob Lemon.
Bob Lemon, right.
Bob Lemon of the Cleveland Indians, 20-game winner like five or six times. He was incredible. Ended up managing the Yankees later in his career. But, oh, man, that Bob Lemon, Mike Garcia, Bob Feller, and Early Wynn, the big four.
Early Wynn, yep.
Early
yeah,
Wynn,
I used to collect,
300-game winner.
I used to collect baseball cards, too, you know, and I still collect baseball cards. Yeah. Do you follow the Rays at all?
I do. I keep up with all of them. They're on my – one of the channels up here, so I watch them all
mm-hmm.
the time.
Yep.
And they're getting hot right now again.
Yeah, they're not bad. They're not bad for not having anybody left, you know, any of their big
yeah,
stars.
Yeah, who would have thought after they got rid of everybody they'd be doing what they're doing now? They're actually got a better record than the Angels have.
I know.
So.
Well, Bobby, I want to thank you so much, man, for being on the show today.
It's been my pleasure. I didn't know we were going to talk about baseball, but that's fun. I talk about baseball all day.
Well, I can always talk about baseball.
Well, anytime you want to do it again, just give me a call.
I sure will. It's you're a fellow Florida native. You know, we don't
there
live too
go.
Far away from each other, really. I'm telling you, man, don't complain about your aches and pains, because I think you should do one of those fantasy camps with the Indians, because I tell you, there's a guy 85 years old that hit a line drive right over my head when I did it with the Orioles here. As a matter of fact, it was in Sarasota here. So I'd like to see you in an Indian uniform. That'd be so cool.
That would be fun. Do you know I was the only one in Mariana's Little League with a baseball uniform?
Really?
Everybody else had t-shirts and jeans, and my parents had bought me a little baseball suit, and I had that where you could iron on the name on the back.
Right.
And I had Bob
Lemon.
Had Bob Lemon on the back of the uniform.
Oh, cool.
Half the people in Mariana, they thought my name, I thought he was Goldsboro, but his name is Bob Lemon. Unbelievable.
You know, Goldsboro does sound like a cool baseball player.
You need a broad back to have a name like that. That's the reason I didn't go into major leagues, because my name was too big for my back.
They call you Bobby Gold.
There you go.
Thanks, Bobby. I really appreciate it, man, and keep
Thank
up the
you,
good
Ray,
work.
Enjoyed it.
Me too, man. Take care.
Talk it out. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now. For more information about Bobby Goldsboro, you can visit www.bobbygoldsboro.com. You can also see all his wonderful art, beautiful art pieces on his website. Very special thanks today to Bobby Goldsboro Productions for arranging this interview with Bobby. And, of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and the Wacky Family Business, available now at iUniverse.com and Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.